another top-rated show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm inside the famous Pullman Grand Hotel right now. And you may be asking yourself, what am I doing, what is Tom doing in Sao Paulo, Brazil? Well, of course, I'm an airline pilot, and I flew an airplane down here. Got in this morning about 6:30 in the morning, and that's why I'm here. So I'm broadcasting live from the hotel. It's been a somewhat nice to cloudy, thunderstormy day. If you live in Florida, like I do, then you know what kind of day this was. Not quite as warm as it's been in Florida the last few days, but a nice day overall. So we've got some things to talk about. But before I get into today's discussion, if you looked at the Facebook page at the American Hour radio show on Facebook, you would see that we're going to talk a little bit about the GOP's plan to cut $5.8 trillion from future spending. And I got a request to talk about the DREAM Act, and then we'll also talk about a potential impending government shutdown. Now, if you want to call into the show, please do. The number is 310-982-4145, and we can take more than one caller. We can take up to 50 callers, actually, or maybe it's 100 callers. So we got plenty of room for callers, not that I expect that many today, but if you'd like to call in, feel free. Now, let me tell you about some upcoming shows that we've got going on here. This Friday, big show, Franz Cabreau, the most influential conservative in Florida. If you don't live in Florida, you may not know who Franz is, but you will soon. If you live in Florida, you probably know who Franz is. He's a good friend of mine. He was a naval aviator also an airline pilot, and he wrote a book called Stolen History. It's a fantastic book about the history of black civil rights in the U.S. that you've never heard of. And so if you haven't heard his presentation before, it's quite an eye-opener, and he has a lot of other great stuff to talk about. We'll talk about some things, of course, two military guys. We'll have to talk about some military stuff, what's going on over in Libya, and a few other things. And, of course, some things that are going on in Florida, particularly Central Florida. On the 11th of April, Paul Skousen, the author and a former CIA officer, worked in the Reagan administration, and his father was Cleon Skousen, the author of the 5,000-year leap. He also was the author of The Naked Communist, and Paul has taken up the Herculean effort of continuing the trilogy that his father started with a third book called The Naked Socialist. So he's going to talk about that. He also had a piece that he put out probably at the end of the year. It would have been the beginning of this year. It was called The Top 10 Constitutional Violations of the Obama Administration. Pretty interesting piece. So a lot of good things to talk with Paul. We'll have him on for the full hour on the 11th. That would be next Monday. Then on the 12th, Kelly Townsend, the founder and I guess you'd call her chairman of the board or president of the Greater Phoenix Tea Party Group or Patriot Group. And I apologize, I don't remember the exact name now, but we'll get that on the website and we'll promote that again as the week goes on. But she's going to come on and talk to us about what's going on in Arizona. And some of you may know that I actually grew up in Tucson, Arizona, so I have some close ties there. I've got a lot of cousins that still live there in Tucson and a lot of friends. And tell me exactly what's going on. So it'll be nice to hear from her. She lives a little bit further north than that, but get her perspective on some of the different bills and actions that have been going on in Arizona. Then on the 14th, Mark Ross, good friend of mine. He does a lot of great Twittering. You need to look for him on Twitter if you follow on Twitter. Look for at Mark Ross. You get a lot of great stuff from him. I always look forward to his daily tweets. And one of the things he put out on his Hyperblog Cafe blog about a week or so ago was a really nice article entitled, What Exactly is a Conservative? Very nice article. And in the end, what he does is he says, here's a way that we can unite ourselves. We have a variety of types of conservatives, but here's one banner that we can unite ourselves under and really forge ahead as a common front. So don't miss that. That's going to be on the 14th of April. And then on The next Monday, 18th of April, we've got Nick Taxiro, and I hope I said his last name correctly. But he is the proprietor, if you will, and the satirist that does Da Progressive. If you go online to look for Da Progressive, and I think it may be daprogressive.org, you'll find his newsletter and blog and everything else goes on there, and it is hilarious. This guy is hilarious. I laugh every time I go there. I love his stuff. So he will be on the show on the 18th. On Friday, the 22nd, which happens to be Earth Day, I think it's very fitting that we have Tim Scott, former NASA astronaut, retired Navy captain, and the dean of the aeronautics at the Florida Institute of Technology. And we're going to be talking about NASA for the majority of the show. So those of you in the Space Coast, Central Florida, this is going to be a good call. Winston, he's going to give us his perspective on things, where they are now, where they're going to go, where he'd like to see them go, and how we can get there. So that's going to be a great show. Those are some of the upcoming shows that we've got, just to give you an idea. And let's get on to the GOP's recommendation for cutting future spending. Now, I didn't look at any detailed analysis or rather explanation of their cutting. I didn't really have to because I noticed something as I started looking at all the articles today that were covering that. It kept saying $5.8 trillion will be cut from future spending over the next 10 years. Future spending, not the debt, just future spending. We're still going to continue to go into debt, just not at as fast a rate. Now, if you're listening out there, call in, please. I want to see what you have to say about this, what you think about this. Call in at 310-982-4145. That's 310-982-4145. If you're looking at the website, the number's right there. Call on in. I want to know what you think about it because I am not too impressed with that. I realize we can't do stuff overnight, but I get the impression that we're dragging this out so that nobody can get blamed for moving too quickly and that we can not to appease the Democrats or liberals, but just that we're being timid and that we're going to do that over 10 years. Now, the GOP has said we'd like to by about 2021. Eliminate the debt. So for 10 years, we're just going to slow down the debt increases, and then we'll get serious beyond that point. You know, a lot of these legislators may very well be gone at that point. So they can, you know, in their old age say, hey, I got things going the right way, but you guys just couldn't finish the deal. And we know that in 10 years, the Republicans may not be in charge of the House. They might not be in charge of the House in 2 or 4 years. So it's to me seems a little bit timid. In fact, I think it's a lot timid, and I'm not too impressed with that. I would have liked to have seen bigger cuts. And I was very disappointed at the two amendments to the continuing resolution that did not pass. The first one was to cut 5% across the board of non-defense and security spending. Of course, we know that they would have still gotten into some of the non-mandatory, probably defense and security spending, but hey, that's why it's called non-mandatory. So, and then there was another proposal on it. The two legislators escaped my mind, I apologize, but the other amendment was for a 5.5% across the board cut for just 8 agencies. But we couldn't rally together and do that because that's not the way to cut this deficit and our deficit spending, just to hack straight across. We had Republicans saying that. You know, I'm to the point where I really don't care about taking a surgical knife out anymore and slicing away and paring away at little moles on this gargantuan creature. I want to take a chainsaw and an axe out and start chopping this thing down. We've got to get serious about this. And we don't have to hurt seniors when we do this. You know, I think I talked about it yesterday, but the reality is this. Medicare and Medicaid mandatory spending add up to about $1.3 trillion in our 2010 budget. Now, what do you think the federal government adds up to? You're going to see lots of stuff on the news that talks about, discretionary spending is only about $400 billion. Well, we have lots of non-mandatory military and national security and other spending that really, quite honestly, is pork. it's our legislators bringing pork back to their districts, and they'll argue all day long, and you know they will. I wrote an op-ed last June about the F-35 alternate engine, and guess what? It's been turned off now. But we did appropriate $650 million last summer to a program that now has been stopped. And the reason is we just simply can't afford it. Now, what was the gist of my op-ed? It was, we can't afford this right now, and I proved in my op-ed it's not necessary right now. If we were just rolling in dough, sure, let the military spend it. But still, I still think I would have opposed unless somebody could give me a much better answer as to why we need to spend the money, and none of our legislators could come up with those answers. So that's the kind of thing that has added to the non-mandatory and discretionary spending. So guess what our federal government and all these agencies cost us that we're not getting a huge return on investment on? $1.3 trillion. Now, recall, what was the number I said for Medicare and Social Security? About $1.3 trillion. So when the media and politicians tell you that the anchor that is really weighing down this ship is the entitlement spending in the form of Social Security and Medicare, the federal government's just as big. Now, if you're really ambitious and you'd like to go take a look at the Debt Commission report, the bipartisan Debt Commission, chaired by two senators that helped bring us to this brink, be my guest. I've done it. It's not particularly fun reading. But one thing you'll notice that really stood out to me and jumped out to me was that when it talked about reducing government spending, it never once mentioned or suggested cutting the size of government. It only suggested making government more efficient. But guess what it recommended when it came to Medicare? Cutting. How about the Defense Department? Cutting. How about Social Security? Cutting. But the government, no, we wouldn't want to make the government smaller. That's bad. Because in reality, and I've heard this for the last couple of weeks now, as we approach this potential government shutdown, as well as trying to cut some real meat out of this budget, the Democrats keep saying this is not the time to really go with big cuts to the budget because it's going to kill jobs. Since when did the government create jobs? I'm confused. In other words, what the Democrats are saying is let's keep more money out of the private sector so that we can create jobs. I thought it was the other way around. Let's put more money into the private sector to create jobs. And as the Democrats will argue, oh, that's just trickle-down economy. It's not trickle-down at all. We're talking about small businesses across the country can utilize that money, and they will hire people, and we will see job creation if we can reduce the size of government and the burden on the taxpayer. So that's my perspective on the GOP's proposal for spending cuts. There are a lot of details in there. I know they're going to come out on what specifically they're cutting, and we'll talk about that in the next few days. But I just wanted to highlight the fact that it's not cutting the deficit at all. It's not cutting the total debt at all. It's just reducing the amount that we're slipping off of this cliff. We're not slipping. We're not going to slip off as fast, but we're still slipping. I think we need to do something a little more aggressive than that. All right, I got a caller here. I think I recognize the phone number. Let's bring our first caller on. Good afternoon. It looks like somebody calling from New Smyrna Beach or Port Orange.
You're going to get it sooner or later, Tom.
Hi, Dick. I didn't want to say hi, Dick, and it just somehow, maybe Ann was calling in. So, in any case,
are you trying to get my blood pressure up?
Yeah, it was way too low the other day, you remember. So, I'm trying to help elevate that a little bit so it doesn't go too low. How are you doing today, Dick?
If we think back, Social Security, that was set up only for people that put into it. It was not to be taxed, and that was basically their retirement for companies that couldn't afford to put into a retirement. However, Social Security, it got too big, and the government said, oh, my God, look at all that money. When they first dug into it, I believe the money went to support the people on welfare. And that is
a big Ponzi scheme. Yeah, it has turned into a big Ponzi scheme, and you're right. It has turned into a big Ponzi scheme and a slush fund for the government. You're right. They saw that money.
It has.
Man, we could use that. And you know what's interesting? If you go back in time, there's always a justification. Boy, we don't, you know, if we look at projected future money coming in from Social Security, it's just fantastic. There's so many good things that we could do right now, so many good entitlement programs that we could initiate right now. And that's what the government always does. And look at California. You know, I lived out there for 15 years when I was in the Navy, and that's exactly what they did. Oh, we can use this money for this. And the other thing they did was they floated a lot of bonds. And what are bonds? Bonds are debt. And guess what? It's time to pay those bonds off, except the projections they made 20 years ago were incorrect. So they don't have the money now. And I have no sympathy for them. You know what I used to do when I was in California? I don't know if you've ever seen this many, I can't remember the term for it now. It's not amendments, but proposals or propositions. That's it, propositions for future spending. And it would go to the tax, to all of us voters. And you would get a booklet sometimes, especially with a big general election coming up, that might be almost as big as a small phone book of all of the propositions for, you know, increasing money for schools and this and that. And it just went on and on and on. I generally went right on down the line and said no, 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 because, not because I didn't think those were good things, but the way they were going to pay for all of those things 20 years ago was bonds. And guess what? Now, it's all come back, as one of our favorite pastors said, the chickens have come home to roost. And that's what's happened in California. Now, I do remember one specific, and I think you'd like this, one specific proposition that I did vote yes for, and that was three strikes. And it passed in California. And I remember a story of a gentleman who was a two-striker, not a nice guy. He was walking along the beach, and some kids were sitting there at a table on a patio there eating some pizza. And he reached over and grabbed one of the slices of pizza and started eating it. So he basically stole it. And some police officers just happened to be in the vicinity. The kid started screaming, "Hey, what are you doing?" The cops came running over, arrested him, found out he was a two-striker. Now, just stealing a piece of pizza made him a three-striker. Go to jail for the rest of your life. I have no sympathy for that guy. A lot of bleeding hearts in California said, "You can't send a guy to jail for just stealing a piece of pizza." Well, you know that if he was that bad, that would put him in jail forever as a three-strike, that his two strikes leading up to that were a lot of bad stuff. And so that's the one thing I voted for in California that I'm happy to say that I voted for.
I live in Florida, of course. I was born and raised in Minnesota. And something that has always ruffled my feathers, you can go out and murder 5-10 people. And in Minnesota, there is no death penalty. Now, I'm not saying I'm for it or against it. Minnesota has life imprisonment. What most of the people don't realize, life imprisonment is 20 years, then you're out. Now, part of those 20 years is counted for the time you sat in the county jail waiting to go to trial. So you're probably, and with good time, you're looking at 10 to 13 years in prison for capital murder, one. And they're back on the street.
Wow.
That is sick.
Wow. Yeah. That is. Well, that's, I think Texas was just getting ready to execute a guy, and then I think maybe he got a stay there. But they were going to test out a new drug that's supposed to be more humane. And I thought I saw something on the news that they got a reprieve. You've probably seen this in law enforcement, how some of these guys just get reprieve after reprieve, or the whole process gets drug out for 20 years, and they could be convicted, a serial murder. But the system allows them to really drag this stuff out.
The system does. If you do sentence a man to murder, and let's say you've got all the proof in the world, you've got the DNA, maybe you even captured him on a video camera, that man is going to sit in prison probably 25 to 30 years before they execute him, that we're supporting him. I don't know if I really believe in that, when you have dyed-in-the-wool proof that this person is guilty. Now, granted, there are some people that are in prison convicted of crimes that they didn't do, and through DNA, it's now being proven they didn't do it. That has happened in the past, but that is a very, very small percentage versus those that are guilty.
Interesting. Well, I tell you what we're going to do. Let's take a quick break here, and it's going to be a very quick break, and then we'll come back and let's talk about the government potential government shutdown and what your thoughts are on that, Dick. And anybody out there that would like to call in, feel free to call in to 310-982-4145. We'd like to hear what your thoughts are on a potential government shutdown. Whether you think it would be a good thing, a bad thing, you'd like to avoid it, et cetera. But we'll come back and talk about that in just a moment. And for now, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
All right, that was the extent of our break. We're back now, and if you're just tuning in, I'm broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I'm down here because I'm an airline pilot. I flew a 767 down here last night. I'll be broadcasting again tomorrow, same time, same place, and then flying back to Miami tomorrow night. And then I'll be back in Florida for the rest of the week and early next week and broadcasting from there. We've got Dick Berenbach on the phone with me from Port Orange, Florida, and we're going to talk about this impending or potential government shutdown. And what do you think about that, Dick? Do you think that would be a good thing or a bad thing?
I think some of your listeners are going to call in and call me a crazy radical. The government has not reached a budget. I don't believe in postponing it. You have a deadline for a budget. When that deadline comes, the government is shut down. What I don't agree with is what is really shut down on the government. The small middle workers that are working in federal parks, stuff like this. If you want to shut the federal government down, shut it down, including all of the people in Congress and the president. Your pay has just stopped. You will continue working until you come up with a balanced budget, and you're not getting paid for it because you didn't do your job in the first place. I believe in shutting the government down, but really shut it down.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what. My feelings on this are this. I was in the Navy when the government got shut down. I believe it was 84 when Reagan just had to veto that spending bill. And I was supposed to be traveling from Pensacola, Florida to Kingsville, Texas as I transitioned from primary flight training to intermediate jet training. And I could have used the money that I was supposed to get that month. But at the end of, I guess it was the 1st of October, beginning of October, and I don't remember what the dates that you actually got paid anymore. It's been so long. But I didn't get paid. Now, I've heard numerous talk shows where people said, oh, it won't affect the military. No, it won't affect us in that you keep working. But what it does affect is you won't get a paycheck. I got nothing in my bank account, my direct deposit, when it was shut down. I did get it the next payday, but I went whatever it was, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it was, without that money. And it's not to say that I was living paycheck to paycheck, but I had to purchase a rental vehicle. See, here's what happened. I had to purchase a rental truck to move the stuff. I had to wait until my landlord decided that the apartment I was moving out of was okay to then send me a check. So that money was tied up there. Then when I got to Kingsville, Texas, I had to find an apartment and put a security deposit down and a first month's payment as well. So you can see, for somebody that's an ensign in the Navy, or even think about our poor enlisted folks during that time frame that had to do a family move at the same time, boy, it could be a severe hardship. So I wasn't too happy about that and understand what goes on. In the case of this potential government shutdown, I think it is absolutely pathetic and disgraceful that this previous Congress did not even attempt to write a budget. There's a two-step process here where you put together a budget and then you authorize it. Then you appropriate the money for it. They appropriated the money without putting together an actual budget. Can you imagine a family in our country saying, listen, this is how much money we have to spend for the month. So just be careful what you're doing, but just spend it however you want, and we'll see if we make it to the end of the month. That's so irresponsible. You know, if my parents did that, listen, if I did that as a kid, I would have gotten, gotten a little bit of a whooping there or something. But to have our federal government do that to us, and then, you know, it's somehow our fault, and we're going to have to pay for this and pony up some more tax money or go further into debt. And really, any time we talk about going further into debt, you know, Dick, it's really not – I mean, I can't speak for you, but it's overall not affecting me. But it's affecting my kids, and it's going to affect them for a long time. And so what these irresponsible leaders are doing is they are piling this problem onto the backs of children, and in some case might even be children that haven't even been born yet and don't even have a say in this. So I think it's disgraceful. I think it's just completely not what we expect out of our elected officials. And I think that they need to come to an agreement. Now, when I say come to an agreement, I think the Democrats better get on board and start making some cuts. If they're not willing to do that, then yes, I think a government shutdown is necessary, because we have got to start cutting the size of the federal government so that we can start reducing some of this debt. I don't want to see a shutdown. It's a bad thing. It can get ugly, but people, I think, understand at this point that the military will keep operating, the Border Patrol will keep operating, and everybody will keep operating. They just won't get paychecks on payday if this happens to occur over a payday. So I think it's a letdown of the people who serve our country and our nation. It's a huge letdown to them. It's a huge letdown to the taxpayer. And we elected a Republican Congress to make some serious cuts, not dance around the issue and pass a bill that they could say, hey, we passed a bill that made some pretty good cuts. Well, it's a bill that would never pass in the Senate. Why don't you get a little more aggressive about it? And they should have been way more aggressive. You know the bargaining process. If you say that we want a 10% cut across the board, then you offer up a 30% cut. And when the Democrats say, oh, no, that's draconian, say, well, what about a 25%? Eventually, you get them to maybe a 15 to 18% cut, when in reality, you are only going to offer – this is negotiation 101. I can't yes. believe the kind of negotiations I'm seeing going on. It's like somebody in the third grade negotiating. I don't get it.
I think I can tie this all up with what you said earlier in the show about the government wanting to create jobs. It wasn't the government that created this country. It was the small businessman that made this country. And in that small business, if you were working for your employer and you didn't do your job, you didn't have your job very long. He would find somebody that would do the job and do it in a timely manner, which brings me back to my other issue. Our people in Washington are not doing their job in a timely manner.
Right.
And they don't
right.
create jobs. It's
no.
it's us.
No, they need to
people
get out of the
here
way.
That make the work. Pardon?
Yeah. They need to get out of the way. That's the thing. That's why we need to shrink the size of government. One, because it's not giving us a return on investment. But two, it's just getting in the way of things. It's getting in the way of our entrepreneurs, our small businesses, our family-run businesses, et cetera. We just need to get out of the way. So I found some interesting numbers today. I mean, I already knew these numbers, but I want to just pin them down. During the 8 years of the Bush presidency, What do you think our debt, our total debt, increased by? And I don't mean to catch you off guard here, but I know you'll come up with a decent guess.
I'm guessing a couple trillion.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was 3.2 trillion. How much have we racked up in the last 3 years? We've done 4.4 trillion in the last 3 years. So for all of those of you out there that would like to say, oh, this administration inherited this, yeah, they inherited an eight-year, $3.2 trillion increase in the national debt and then dogpiled on top of that. I mean, if we continue going at the rate we're going, we're going to have, you know, something like in an eight-year, let's say Barack Obama gets reelected, in an eight-year period, we're going to have something close to, 11, maybe $12 trillion. So let's compare $12 trillion in debt to Bush's 3.2. We cannot keep going that direction. And what the president has proposed keeps us going precisely that direction. What the Democrats have proposed, wait a minute, they haven't proposed a thing. Ah, yeah, because remember, they couldn't even give us a budget for 2010. What have they proposed for 2011? Nada, not a thing. So we've got to put the pressure on them and get something done. If that results in a government shutdown, I don't want to see it, but we need to put the full court press on now and make something happen. I think the way I'm reading things now is that the Republicans are really trying to work something out. In every article I read, work something out with the Democrats. But the Democrats are basically sitting on their thumbs going, no, we want to see the government shut down because we're going to blame you. Now, let's think about this. The Congress, yes, does have the purse strings for our government. They get to put together bills that raise revenue. The Senate doesn't. But the Senate does get to work on it and add some amendments to it. And then the president can make his recommendations, and then he can ultimately sign it or veto it. Of the three branches of the – or it's two branches. Of the two branches of the government, the three portions, but the two branches, the presidency, the Congress, and the Senate, who has the majority? The Democrats. And they're trying to act like they're not in – have no say in this whatsoever, and it's going to all be the Republicans' fault. And, in fact, the Republicans may be in the majority in the House, but are there any Democrats in the House? Of course there are. They're acting like little spoiled children, and I've had it with that. So it's time to take some extreme measures, and I don't want to see another continuing resolution. I think the Republicans would almost be willing to do that, from what I'm reading, if the Democrats would start some serious negotiations. But it looks like the Democrats want this to happen so they can blame the Republicans. And what that tells me is our Democrat legislators and politicians here really don't care about you and me, Dick. They don't care about us. It's all a big game.
They don't care at all.
It's a big game. Yeah. So I'm not too happy about that.
Can I give your listeners a little bit of a laugh? At least I hope it gives them a laugh. A bumper sticker on a car. This is true. Pray for Obama. Psalm 109:8. Now, if you check a Bible, you will find Psalm 109:8 says, and I quote, "Let his days be few and brief, and let others step forward to replace him."
Good one, good one, good one.
Like yes. the Democrats,
that works for
their
me.
Whole thing, the Democrats' whole thing has been the blame game. All the blame on the Republicans. Everything is their fault. It's Bush's fault. It's everybody's fault but theirs.
Well, you know, I've put this out before, and I think you've heard me say this, but I saw something about a year ago from various people in government, and I don't have to name them. I think anybody listening will know. And I knew there had to be a term for it, so I searched and searched, and I finally found it. The term is self-serving bias, and what it means is people attribute their successes to personal factors, but attribute failures to someone else. That's a self-serving bias. And I think we've got a lot of that in our government going on right now, starting at the very top.
I have to agree.
There's. I've got another quote here, and I'm going to read it to you. You probably know, you've heard me quote so many people in the past, so I don't want you to have to try and guess. You can if you want. But this is a quote from somebody that a lot of people admire and a president from quite some time ago. Is it unreasonable then to expect that some man possessed of the loftiest genius coupled with ambition sufficient to push it to its utmost stretch, will at some time spring up amongst us? And when such a one does, it will require the people to be united with each other, attached to the government and laws, and generally intelligent to successfully frustrate his designs.
That sounds an awful lot like George Washington.
It wasn't. It was a bit later on. It was Abraham Lincoln said that. And he I'm sorry. I should have let you guess a couple of times more. But he was warning us of a very ambitious politician that would rise up one day. And you've heard me do some of the other quotes from that speech, but it really describes what we're dealing with today. And so I think it is going to take the people to unite to frustrate his designs, and his designs to transform the United States of America is not what you and I think mainstream Americans want. We want something better. We want to always be pursuing something better and improving our lot in life and our condition in our nation, but not to transform. That's not the right way to go. We want to improve on what we have, not alter it into some
Let me ask you a question. You have traveled quite a bit around the world, both in the military and flying for the airlines and stuff. Do you know of any country in this world that has the quality of life and everything that we have as good as us? I messed that up.
No. Well, the answer is no, but I'm going to qualify that no. I've been to some countries that are pretty darn nice, but they pay for that. They pay very high taxes. And there are a few countries in Europe. We've got Australia, Canada, but they pay very high taxes. And yet they still don't meet the quality of life that we have. Yes, you can go there and say, oh, this is a wonderful place. But I can tell you right now, the health care is not what it is in our country. Yeah. And people would say, oh, but it's free. Well, you pay a high price. But whenever you have a really, really serious condition, generally you're going to come to the United States for that condition. Not all serious conditions.
Yeah.
This is where people
I was referring to basically was most people have beautiful homes. They've got a couple of cars, their boats, maybe a lake home. They live out in the country where they're a little bit secluded or in one of the nicer suburbs. Most of your other people in other countries don't have all of that. They don't get a summer vacation where they take off and go to the lake home. And you know what I'm getting? Life is just so beautiful.
Well, it is. And like I said, I've been to some countries that are pretty darn close, but the reality is the freedom that we do have and are able to exercise in our supposed control of the government, at least the way that our Constitution was written, really is the envy of the world. Our Constitution is the envy of the world, and it's what has made us the greatest nation in the world. And a plug for the 5,000-Year Leap book, if you come to my Facebook page, the American Hour Radio Show, go on Facebook and type in the American Hour Radio Show. You'll get there. Join that page. Every month I give away a copy of the 5,000-Year Leap, as well as 12 pocket constitutions that you can share with your friends. Keep one for yourself. The pocket constitutions I hand out have not only the Constitution, but the Declaration of Independence, the Gettysburg Address, and let's see what else, the Ten Commandments. So every month I give one of those away to one of the members of the American Hour Radio Show page on Facebook, so go check that out. And the 5,000-Year Leap book, the premise of that whole book is, until we came along in this nation and created a constitution that was designed to allow the people to govern themselves without the government getting out of control and ultimately becoming a tyranny, we saw the advances in technology and quality of life and everything that we are famous for in the last couple hundred years here in the United States of America, take that huge leap. Nothing had really changed in 5,000 years. And then freedom and liberty and the pursuit of happiness at our discretion, that changed everything. And that changed the world, really. So that's the premise of the book. And it's a great read on how we ended up with the Constitution that we have, where we started at the beginning of our nation and takes you through the Articles of Confederation, and then how our founders decided to create the government that we have, the federal government that we have, and how they came up with the idea for the separation of powers, etc. It's not a difficult book to read, and my book has got highlighting and notes all over it. I think once you pick that up, if you're a conservative, or even if you're not that conservative right now, I think it'll draw you that way because it gives you a great understanding of what our founders intended and why they did what they did. So I don't know. Have you read that book, Dick?
The 5,000-Year Leap, we have a copy here, and I believe we have passed out 6 or 7 copies to people we know or family members.
Well, God bless you. I knew you'd have a copy. I knew you'd, or you would have had a copy that you used to have, and that you maybe gave that to somebody. But yeah, that's great. So I give one of those away every month. Come to the Facebook page. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at The American Hour. Just type in all one, you know, no spaces, just The American Hour, and you'll find me there on Twitter. At times, when I have time, I research and put stuff out on my own. But I also have some really awesome people that I follow, and they come up with some great stuff. Like I was mentioning earlier, Mark Ross, who's going to be on the program on the 14th. Fantastic guy. You're going to love this guy if you're a conservative. And if you're not, I think you go to his webpage, Hyperblog Cafe, and read some of the things he's put together. Very sensible, smart, straightforward young guy, and he's going to make a great guest. So let's see. Why don't we take another break here? This will be probably the last break we take, and we'll come back, and let's talk a little bit about the DREAM Act. I had a request to talk about the DREAM Act. You know, Dick, that I wrote a op-ed for the Washington Times last year entitled The Rovian Fallacy, and we'll maybe talk a little bit about that. But we'll talk a little bit about the DREAM Act. In fact, I'll just kind of go into the most important aspect of it, and then we'll move on. And
I'm going to have to let you go, Tom. Right. My wife has got supper on the table. But it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, wow.
Again.
Well, yeah. Enjoy the dinner. I wish I could be there, but we'll talk again another time. Thanks for coming on, Dick.
Thank you, Tom. Bye.
National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Now, you hear me do ads for the NVHS, fantastic group, and they really are establishing a model for handling homeless veterans in Central Florida, a model that can branch out to the rest of this country and help get our vets back into society that need the help. There's a variety of reasons they're homeless, a whole host of reasons that they're homeless. And this is a model for addressing those issues and helping them. Check out the website. You'll get some good information if you don't know anything about homeless vets and why they end up homeless and what can be done about them. Please check that out. It's a great website, and support them if you can. All right, I said I was going to talk a little bit about the DREAM Act. And what is it about the DREAM Act that is the most egregious? Is it that we're trying to help young people that were brought here, not by choice necessarily by their parents, but they've grown up here, and now they just want to stay here? And why can we turn some young people like that down? Well, you know, if it were just young people, that might be one thing. But the Act, the DREAM Act, opens the door to so much corruption, if you will, and or people getting away with stuff that maybe wasn't intended in this, but it just is full of loopholes. So what I found when I went through this act myself the first time, and that was the 2009 version, there were some egregious acts. There was no age limit on anybody applying for this. The 2010 version has an age limit, and that age limit is 30. But the age limit is at the time that the DREAM Act would be enacted. So 2-3 years on down the road, somebody could come in and say, listen, I should have applied, but I was in this bad situation, whatever. But I was under 30 at the time. I'm 33 or 34 now. Well, they would still qualify. And I can tell you what's going to happen. I grew up in southern Arizona, and I lived in San Diego for 15 years when I was in the Navy. You may have noticed that my last name is Garcia, and my family background is Mexico. I guarantee you people are going to come across under the age of 30 or over the age of 30. And remember what we've labeled folks like this that come into our country without papers and without authorization. They're undocumented. Undocumented means there are no documents. So if somebody's 32, 31, how do we know? If they walk across the border tomorrow and the DREAM Act says, well, they have to have been here for 5 continuous years and brought here by their parents under the age of 16. How do we know any of that? By definition, they're undocumented, so there's no way to know that. And we do a background check on them. Well, if that's their true name, how do we know? How do you do a background check on an undocumented person? I suppose if they've gotten in trouble and they've been fingerprinted, there you go. We could do that. But if they've not ever been fingerprinted, we really don't know the history of these people, and that's why we call them undocumented. So there are a lot of loopholes in this, and the biggest loophole is where it's called the hardship loophole. That's not what it's called in the text of this, but there are exceptions. Almost every paragraph has an exception or an extension or this or that. But the Secretary of Homeland Security has the authority and discretion to give out extensions as well as look at hardships and say the requirements, such as a high school degree or enrolled in a college or in going into the military, can be waived. But there's no explanation of what it takes to waive that. It's just up to the Secretary's discretion. So it's full of loopholes, and I see nothing but problems with this bill, and that's why I opposed it, and that's a good part of the reason why it didn't get passed. So that's the DREAM Act. Now, as far as illegal immigration goes, I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Times back in, I don't even remember when it was, but it was last year. If you do a Google, Tom Garcia, op-ed, Washington Times, it'll pop up. And the title was The Rovian Fallacy. And I don't want to pick on Karl Rove, but the fact is he proposed a concept for the Republican Party that if we could co-opt the proposals for amnesty away from the Democrats, then we're going to get their share of the Hispanic vote. Well, it's not going to happen. And the reason this isn't going to happen is I know the Hispanic culture, and many of my friends who are Americans of Hispanic origin tell me the same exact thing, and they absolutely agree. There are plenty of organizations out there full of people like myself and folks that are even closer, you know, first generation, that will tell you that that is not a true theory. And let me give you just a couple points on why that's not going to happen. If 12 to 20 million illegal aliens are amnestized, that's the way to say it, it can be estimated conservatively that a majority of these new citizens will vote Democrat. That's just the way it's going to go. And I'll tell you why. I've spoken with Latinos and Latinas right in South Florida and asked them, why are you a Democrat? And they can't quite give me an answer. And I know what the answer is. I say to them, because they're first generation. I mean, they're not first generation. They've immigrated. And I say to them, is it because the term Democrat sounds like democracy? And they always say, yes, that's it. And I said, well, first of all, you have to understand that we're not a democracy in this country. We are representative democracy, a republic. And it's a different thing. But see, the countries they came from, they want democracy. Compared to what they had, a straight democracy would be better. And we all know those never succeed, but they believe that what we have is democracy, and they just don't understand the concept. Once they understand the concept, most Hispanics, I find, of immigrants that came from another country, end up becoming Republicans because the platform that we stand on, individual liberty, is what they're seeking out, not collectivism, which is what liberals want. They want collectivism. Our nation was founded on individual liberty, not collectivism. Okay, so there's bullet point one. Two, if there is no amnesty, well, none of the illegal aliens can vote, so it doesn't harm the Republican Party. If there is an amnesty, current U.S. citizens of Hispanic origin will vote as they have been voting anyway. It's not going to change their vote. They're not going to suddenly go, oh, well, you guys came up with this idea and said, fine, let's have an amnesty. They're still going to vote Democrat. And that's what I believe. That this alone, this issue alone, is not going to change their minds. If there is no amnesty, current U.S. citizens of Hispanic origin that want to vote Democrat will continue to vote Democrat. So really, none of this changes. And so the concept of doing something to get votes that I believe is wrong is not a good idea. And I think Mr. Rove just went astray on this one a little bit. Here's my feeling on amnesty. It's, well, shoplifting is the shopping. Let me back up, because I used to say this all the time on the campaign trail. The difference between shopping and shoplifting is one's doing it legally, the other's doing it illegally. The difference between an illegal immigrant and a legal immigrant is one's doing it illegally, the other's doing it legally. You can make the same arguments for the two. Boy, they're coming from a poor country and they just don't have anything and they're just trying to provide for their family. Oh, well, then let's give amnesty to all shoplifters. No. And here's maybe the most interesting aspect of my take on this, I think. We will prosecute to the fullest extent of the law somebody that shoplifts from Walmart. A pair of pants, an iPod, especially if it is something like an iPod that's pretty valuable, we will have them prosecuted. But when somebody tries to steal the most precious treasure that we have in our country, citizenship, we want to let them slide on it. We want to let them go. It doesn't make any sense to me, and I'm not going to support it, and I won't support it, and it's wrong. It's just plain wrong. So you can't make all the excuses you want for it. The reality is, you're going to create generations, and we have seen this happen, and it's happening in California, generations that had received amnesty under Reagan, which was a mistake, they do not have a true sense of citizenship, and they take it for granted. That's why we see in California, one of the states with the longest history of Hispanics coming into the country illegally, not feeling that their U.S. citizenship is of the same value as their Mexican or other country citizenship, wearing bandanas and Hispanic or Mexican flags, carrying Mexican banners and putting stickers in their windshields. You know, I used to see these stickers in Florida, and I don't see them so much anymore, and I'm sort of glad I don't. But it had a flag of the country that the person came from, and it said, "Mi orgullo." And that means my pride. You know, if I were living in a place like Colombia or Peru and put an American flag in the window and said, "Mi orgullo," my pride, that car would be torched within about 24 hours, if not stolen, destroyed. And if I were anywhere near the car, I'd probably – they are very nationalistic and proud of their countries. And I don't – I understand somebody who comes to our country and still has a lot of pride for the country they left. But they left it for a reason. They left it because this country's better. There aren't too many people that were forced to come to the United States of America. There aren't too many people in the United States of America that hate it and can't stand being here because they can very easily leave. They can leave. They're here because of prosperity and the opportunities here. So to put a banner in their car window that says, "Mi orgullo," my pride, I think is really a slap in the face to those of us American citizens that are proud to be Americans. It's fine to put a little flag in your window to show, hey, here's where I'm from, so that if somebody else driving by or parking in the parking lot knows that, hey, we're from the same country, I don't mind that at all. But I guarantee you couldn't do that in their country. So it's a hypocritical approach to citizenship, and we need to look at citizenship in the United States of America as a valuable treasure. It's what gives us all of our rights and privileges and gives us our prosperity and the thing that we want to pass on to our posterity, and we need to start treating it that way. All right, that's enough about the DREAM Act. Tomorrow we'll talk about some other things that are in the news. If you have a particular subject you'd like me to talk about and you'd like to come on and talk about, you want me to cover, go ahead and email that to me. You can send me an email at tom@tomgarcia.com. You can Twitter me at The American Hour, and you can go on Facebook and look up The American Hour Radio Show. I want to thank everybody for listening in today. We've had a nice day doing this. Again, I'm broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Brazil and what's going on here economically and politically for just a little bit tomorrow, and then we'll get back to the U.S. All right. Everybody have a wonderful evening and day, and we'll see you tomorrow.